I'm Melinda the Enforcer. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and this is the Hashtag STRS podcast. What are you doing?
This is a spider doing push-ups on a mirror.
Yeah, and Greg just made a profound observation just before we started this. He goes, oh, these go by fast. Yes, that is the point. That is the whole concept behind
all right, let's close
this
in prayer.
Podcast.
So, thank you, Lord.
Send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag STRS. That's where we get the name of the podcast, and that's where we get your questions. We put Greg on a timer, 4 minutes or less, and he still gives good answers in that time. Let's get going. First question comes from Genesis 3:15. No, that's the question. I'm getting tired. It's been a long day. The question comes from D-Rod.
Look, there are so many odd names, though, for people that
no, that's
I would
true.
Not be at all surprised.
You just like start reading this stuff. There's no ampersand before it, though. The question comes from D-Rod 1414. The question is, yeah, Genesis. Greg's turning to the Bible because I gave it away. Genesis 3:15.
I don't have Genesis memorized yet.
Well, can you find it?
Probably.
Was Jesus conceived through Mary's egg? What would this mean in relation to Jesus being born sinless?
Well, Genesis 3:15 says, I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head and you shall bruise him on the heel. I think there is at least arguably a suggestion there, ex post facto, reading back into the text, knowing what we know about the virgin birth, that it is a woman's seed or the offspring of a woman that will bruise the devil, and it isn't required by that text, but it seems to be a hint once we realize the virgin birth that we see in the New Testament. Now, the question, though, is specifically, was Jesus' birth through, how do you put it,
Mary's egg.
And
well, if he's truly human,
there's
got to be some DNA there.
Well,
right?
I don't know. See, this is why I'm pausing. Adam was truly human, but he had no human parents. So God is capable of creating a truly human individual, okay?
Special creation.
And so this is something we just don't know. Certainly something is going to have to be created to supplement Mary's egg, because Mary's egg only has half the chromosomes that are necessary for a full human being. So maybe the other chromosomes were a supernatural act of the creation of God. Maybe all of them were. We just simply don't know. What we do know is that Jesus was a true human being. That is, everything that is true of any human being in virtue of their human nature was true of Jesus. Well, people say, well, Jesus didn't sin. Well, being fallen is an accidental feature of humanity.
Right.
It is not an essential feature.
Humans were created without sin.
Without sin. And so, and back to Adam, Adam was created de novo, you know, out of nothing, well, a dust.
Ex but, nihilo.
Yeah. A totally new thing. And so it's certainly possible in my mind that a true human being could be created that way in Mary's womb, all right? What actually happened, we don't know. All we know is what Luke records, the angel saying that the Holy Spirit will overshadow you, and therefore the holy offspring shall be called the Son of God. So that's all we know. And there are other things you can conjecture on, but it's hard to know for sure.
No. But, I mean, Jesus is said to be a true descendant of, you know, the line from Mary, from David, from Adam. And it seems like you couldn't truly say that unless he was a physical descendant and not Mary wasn't just basically the incubator for 9 months, you know? I mean, I'm not saying what... You're right,
no.
We don't know, but I'm just thinking it does talk about him being a
so what what's required for him to be a descendant? Does that mean that... And you may be right about this, but I'm just raising the question. Does that require that he share genetic material with at least one human being? Because he was the heir to the throne of David, but that heirship, so to speak, passed through Solomon, and he wasn't a physical descendant of Solomon. His father, Jesus' stepfather, was Joseph, But he did not contribute to Jesus. But, so he was legally
the heir. But
Mary
was from that same line.
But through Nathan, through a different one. And so even though Jesus...
I never knew that before.
Yeah. And that's the difference between the genealogy of Matthew and the genealogy in Luke, which seems like to conflict.
No, well, I know one was
tracks
Joseph and one was Mary.
Yeah, and it goes back up to a different son, Nathan. And so there, in both genealogies, is Jesus the son of Mary, but he's apparently the physical son through Nathan and the legal heir through Solomon and Joseph, down through Joseph. So all I'm saying is, he can still be the legal heir, even though he doesn't.
Still talks about, like, Abraham's seed. And like you've talked about in the Bible, fast forward, there's two meanings of Abraham's seed, but one is physical.
From these loins, yeah. Right. Well, that's the nation of Israel that's going to come. Genesis 18. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
we don't know. I mean,
it's
one
hard
or the
to
other,
know for
but
sure,
yeah.
Those are some of the issues.
I think, yeah. Okay, next question. Is God's offer of salvation from the penalty of sin and eternity in hell available to everyone?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. It is available to everyone. It is offered in principle to everyone. Now, of course, when you say available to everyone, is it available to those who never heard? Well, it's available to them, but they have not heard it, you know. So you might say, well, then it's not available. Like, okay, well, maybe you'd have a point then. It is, in principle, adequate for everyone and the message for the world. Not everyone gets to hear the details of that particular message. And this goes to the question of, what about those who never heard? And I think one of the simplest ways of dealing with that to communicate the culpability of those, that is the guilt or blame that falls to them who have never heard about Jesus, is this. Not everyone has heard about the Son, but everyone has heard about the Father. And that would be the message of Romans 1, because the message of the Father's reality and some of his divine attributes, at least, cannot be missed. Being known through what has been made. That's Paul's argument. And so therefore they are without excuse.
Are you done or just scratching your ear?
I'm scratching my ear.
Okay.
Now that I'm finished with my answer.
Okay. So next question. Oh. I didn't want to cut you off there.
Okay.
Did God's command to Abraham to sacrifice Isaac violate God's own command against human sacrifice?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, and of course, I don't know that there was any command against human sacrifice at that time. That came in the law, which was 400 years later.
It would sort of be seem
yeah,
to
I
be
mean,
one
it raises
of those universal
a question.
Ones.
Pardon me?
It would seem to be one of those universal ones, you know.
Yeah, but see, the difference, though, is, and of course, against human sacrifice.
It would be. Could probably fall into murder too, if not human sacrifice, and that was God spoke against that in Genesis 9:6.
The difference here, yes, right. The difference here, though, is that this is something that God commands. Now, the broader question: this is not going to be satisfying to everybody, and maybe this isn't completely thought through, but I think it's something that needs to be factored in. Does God need a morally sufficient reason for taking any individual life? And my thinking is that God's authority over all life is itself a morally sufficient reason to take life. In other words, God can give life, God can take life. He can take life whenever he wants.
But isn't it like when he smites them down as opposed to asking Abraham to do it?
Well, now you're talking about the means, and the means then is somewhat inconsequential. If God has the authority to do it, he can use different means to do it. The fact of the matter is, though, he did not allow Abraham to carry this out. It was a test to see if Abraham would be willing to sacrifice based on the command of God. Was his trust in God complete enough that he would be willing to do this? Now, there's another detail here that a lot of people aren't aware of, and it comes up, I think it's in Romans chapter 4. There it indicates that, or it could be Galatians, but I think it's in Romans 4. There it indicates that Abraham knew that God could not make this the ultimate end of his purpose because Isaac was the child of promise.
Mm-hmm.
And God knew that, Abraham knew that God would be able to raise Isaac from the dead if he were to go through with that sacrifice, because God had made a promise that he was going to keep. And so he did not waver in faith. I think that's Romans chapter 4. In any event, when one assesses that circumstance, they have to think of the entire set of circumstances that were involved and all the revelation pertaining to it. And those are I think that last detail I offered is a relevant detail.
Yeah. I also think if God's command would be immoral, it would then be required that God intended to follow through on this command and let this happen. And so if God made the command to Abraham to test his faith, but actually never intended for Abraham to do it, there'd be nothing immoral about his command.
Right. That's right.
That's
right. I think you're right about that. And it is not Romans 4. It's somewhere else. Maybe it's Galatians. But it does say that in the New Testament, that Abraham was confident that if Isaac died, that God would raise him from the dead, because Isaac was an absolutely vital part of God's promise.
Mm-hmm. But I think as far as God's morality here, he's off the hook, because God certainly knew he never intended
to
carry
this out.
Yeah, I
think it's a fair point. Right.
So, okay.
Just joking.
God, you know, just joking.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't Abraham say something to Isaac when they were waiting too about, like, God
when
will provide?
When we return. He said God will provide a sacrifice, but he said something about returning
return, right.
together.
As though Abraham kind of had an expectation.
Yes.
He followed through a bit, you know, as God being a test, but there seems to be some indication there that Abraham didn't expect it
right.
to happen either.
Right. I remember that now that you mention it, and that shows you both from the record at the time in the text that describes this, I think it's Genesis 22, and the reflection from the New Testament. In both cases, we have the expectation that if Isaac was killed, that he would be raised from the dead.
Okay, one last one, 2 minutes. Are people morally responsible for actions committed while they're demon-possessed?
No.
You can leave it at one word.
The reason is because a person, just going with the stipulation, if they are possessed, I'm presuming that the actions they were doing were being done under the influence of the possession. So it was the demon using their body to accomplish that. It wasn't the individual himself choosing that. So when the demons in Mark 5, the Gadarene demoniac, for example, are screaming out at Jesus, "Have you come to torment us before our day," etc., was that the man speaking? No, it wasn't the man speaking. It was the demon speaking. The text identifies that. But the demon was using the body of the man. And so it strikes me that any of the things that were done in that demonic fit would also be attributed to the demon and not to the man morally.
Not a usual circumstance, but possible and interesting to think about.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. We post 2 episodes every week, Mondays and Thursdays.
By the way, I was just thinking, though, that means that person might think, well, if I get demon-possessed, I could do anything I want, and then I'm not responsible. And the answer is no. If you're demon-possessed, you will not
do
what you
want.
The demon's going to do what he wants, and
that's
you're not going to like that. I'm just going to thinking that through a little bit.
Yeah, so don't go out looking for a demon to get away with stuff, you know. It's just kind of like Flip Wilson. The devil made me do
devil
it, yeah.
Maybe. Who's Flip Wilson? I know people are going. That goes back to the 60s.
And the 70s. Okay. Unless you're literally demon-possessed, that won't get you off the hook. So we post 2 episodes every week, Mondays and Thursdays. It's in your podcast feed. It's in your app. It's on our website, str.org. I'm Melinda the Enforcer with Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.